Next up, we have Katie Fast from OFS. She's the Executive Director for Oregonians for Food and Shelter, a coalition that promotes the responsible use of pesticides, fertilizers, and biotechnology. Previously, she served as Vice President of Public Policy for the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation and Director of Government Affairs for the Oregon Cattlemen's Association.
Katie?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, good morning, everyone. I just got back. We're gonna mix up this presentation. I just got back from the National Finals Rodeo, and George Pugh, when I was coming in, told me he thought a review about that would be more interesting and inspiring than the Oregon legislature. So how does that sound? No, in all seriously, a little bit about Oregonians for Food and Shelter. We're a coalition of agriculture, timber, and then the companies that manufacture and distribute the products of pesticides, fertilizer, and biotechnology have a strong over 35-year history in the state. So let's talk a little bit about the legislature. We just got off an election. Not a lot of changes, but the changes that we did have in the Senate are going to be pretty powerful this year. So in the Senate, the Republicans picked up one seat. So Alan Bates, who is a senator from Southern Oregon, actually passed away in August. That created a special election in Southern Oregon. And Alan DeBoer, a small business owner from the car automobile industry, won that seat. So bring some moderation to the legislature. I'll talk about a little bit more. Also, about 2 weeks ago, Senator Chris Edwards got a new job with University of Oregon and resigned his seat. So we're going to be seeing a change. Val Hoyle is very likely to be appointed in that position, which really, I think, moderates the legislature, gives us some opportunities to have maybe other Democrats vote with Betsy Johnson on several bills. The House stays the same, and leadership in both chambers stays the same from 2015. So with Chris Edwards leaving, it leaves the Senate Environment Committee without a chair right now. And there's a lot of speculation. The legislature's in town this week. A lot of speculation about who is going to step into that role. And right now, there's two leading choices. Senator Dembro from Portland, who has introduced anti-pesticide legislation in the past, and Senator Roblin from the South Coast are kind of what's the scuttlebutt in the Capitol, but we're not going to know. It hasn't been announced when those decisions will be made. We expect that Representative Witt will remain the chair of the House Ag Committee. Brian Klem would remain the chair of Rural Communities, where we've seen GE legislation go to, and House Environment will have a new chair with Representative Helm, who's a past attorney for Oregon League of Environmental Voters. What's interesting is there's also some rumors and concern that these committees might get changed around, three might become one. Just a lot of uncertainty. There's also a lot of questions about some of the ag bills not going to these committees. In 2015, we saw some of the GE-related legislation go to consumer protection. On the dairy livestock side, we're seeing animal antibiotics legislation go to healthcare. So since we've had good chairs with Witt and Klem, there's some concern about leadership trying to maneuver around them. And when you're looking at the makeup of the legislature, we have a big new change here with the Department of Agriculture. Alexis Taylor comes from USDA, Washington, D.C., but family operates still a Century Farm in Iowa. She had a very positive confirmation hearing yesterday, expected to receive a Senate confirmation this week and start in the middle of January. Strong ag background, but with that being said, Iowa is very different than Oregon. And I think getting to know different crops like grass seed, also not having experience with our legislature as Katie Koba did, It's just going to be a different aspect, a different challenge, and she's going to need some assistance working through the legislature. So I think to talk about last session, you need to talk a little bit, or this session, you need to talk about a little bit about past sessions and what's going on at the local levels. So last session in 2015, very aggressive session around pesticides, pesticide reform package passed, and it ticked off the environmentalist, calling the legislature low wattage for not doing buffers, pre-spray notification, bans on aerial applications. The focus is really on forestry right now, but as we all know, that legislation has implications long-term on what can happen on agriculture's uses. And we're seeing quite a few local initiatives being filed across the state. In Lincoln County, there's an aerial pesticide ban that has qualified for May of 2017. So this election will be taking place during the legislative session and could have quite a bit of implications on discussions during the legislature. In Lane County, there are three active initiative petitions that are approved for signatures. One's an aerial herbicide ban. Both Lincoln and Lane County would be commercial use, so it's ag and forestry, and municipal use. GE crop ban and a community rights initiative. In the community rights initiative, we're seeing pop up quite a few places, and it is really to try to push the county commission not to recognize statewide preemption, because all these initiatives, if passed, they're preempted by state law. We have pesticide and seed preemption that say local governments can't regulate what's happening on your own property related to what seeds you're growing and what products and how you apply your pesticides. Those are reserved to the state and the federal government. And a recent Hawaii case confirmed that the states have the ability to do that. However, the activists want to take away those rights and want to have local control on these issues. Here in Salem, neonic restrictions being circulated that would pretty much make neonics a restricted use product, so you'd have to have a certified applicator's license or be a veterinarian to apply or use the products. Again, preempted by state law, there's actually litigation going on around that measure. We have a concern about statewide measures being filed during the legislative session. This past year, there were three measures that would ban the aerial application in forestry of herbicides. Those measures did not qualify for the ballot, but a lot of us believe that the activists were ballot measure seeking, kind of seeing what they would get through the process in terms of ballot title. And they are preparing to refile during the legislature to try to drive that legislative discussion like we saw with minimum wage. So what pesticide bills do we know that are coming? We know that Senator Dimbrough, who is vying for the Senate Environment Chair, we know he is introducing a pre-spray notification and a pesticide use reporting. I'm not sure if that's specific only to forestry. Bills get introduced in early January, so we'll have a better sense then. We're hearing a lot of discussion around buffers, both in aerial and in ground application. In the 2015 package, there was a buffer around homes and schools for forestry applications, aerially. We're hearing from labor advocates, they'd like to see that in agriculture. We also know there'll be a neonic restriction bill, either a ban or requiring taking away that general use, making a restricted use chemical. And as we've seen in the past, attempts to amend or eliminate preemption. So that puts us in a place right now that we really have no room for error. We saw during the 2015 legislative session probably five times where a reporter out of the Oregonian named Rob Davis really highlighted pesticide use in forestry, challenged Department of Ag's ability to have enough authority to regulate the products, and were on the front page repeatedly during the session that drove that discussion. So that's my first request to all of you, follow the label. Make sure that the products that you're using are approved for the crops that you're using them on, because we're at a point now that one mistake can really drive public opinion and the legislative body. Employee training. Make sure your employees are trained on the products. I'm going to talk a little bit about the new worker protection standards. We're seeing a bigger focus on employees than we've seen in Oregon, and employees using products and employees having training. So that's another piece I just have to stress. So overall budget issues with the legislature, kind of moving out of those pesticide Pacific. We have a $1.7 billion shortfall. This is a very different shortfall than we saw in 2008, 2009. I would say this is more policy driven than actually recession economy driven. Our economy is doing okay right now, but what's happened is we have PERS that continues, hasn't been fixed, so escalating costs in terms of the public employee retirement system. And we also have a decision that was made in the Kitzhaber era around Medicare and Obamacare. We jumped in early as a state, choose to cover some policies in an aggressive stance. We're reimbursed by the federal government, but those reimbursements are getting phased out and it's creating a hole in the budget. So that's really where a lot of that $1.7 billion comes from. It's not because tax revenues are down, it's just that the state is expending more than we're bringing in. We also had the passage of ballot measure 96 that dealt with veterans and ballot measure 99 that dealt with outdoor school. And those are utilizing pretty much all the extra lottery dollars that were in the state. This is having a big impact on small business economic development grants and also where you could backfill with lottery dollars in the budget. Those have been used up by those two programs. So about 2 weeks ago, the governor's proposed budget came out. And some items that you all should be interested in. One, completely eliminates wildlife services. APHIS Wildlife Services is a cost share program between the states, the counties, and the federal government. The state puts in, roughly around $800,000 into the program, wiped out of the budget. So what that means for counties is they will have to pick up more of the share. And if this goes through in the legislature, some counties might be making a hard decision on if they can afford to participate in the program any longer. And with strapped county budgets, it's been a hard program for them to continue anyways. We saw in Department of Ag cuts to the weed program, invasive species, and wolves. I would say for the most part, Department of Ag's budget wasn't as bad as what we were thinking it could be. They have had to produce a list, or will be producing a list of increased recommended cuts for legislative fiscal office because the governor's budget does rely on tax increases that may not happen. And then the other item, you might recall in 2015, there was a big effort and saw the first time an increased funding for the OSU statewide, so research and extension programs. $14 million added into that budget. Governor's budget pretty much takes away a majority of that, not through a cut, but with no increased revenue. So the budget's flat, remains at about $120 million budget, gives them no increased cost to cover those exceeding PERS and other employee packages. So we're looking and we'll be requesting $9.4 million to go to OSU statewide. Otherwise, we're going to be seeing cuts at extension and research again. And then the other item, in the budget is the governor's budget does require tax increases in a few areas. One, eliminating some tax breaks, especially around the new tax initiatives that were passed in 2015 for small businesses, and also increase taxes around sin products, alcohol and tobacco, and vaping if anyone's a vapor. And we keep on hearing some discussion about tax reform. So the Revenue Committee started introducing bills. I think A summary I saw, probably the House Revenue Committee probably has 12 new tax increases, either by eliminating tax cuts or adding new ones on. So we'll see a big discussion around taxes. The good thing about what the legislature's at is no body has a supermajority, so the Democrats have to work with the Republicans. They can't pass it on their own. Other issues related to natural resources that we'll see this session, I have to say water this session. We haven't seen a legislative session where water quality's been a big focus in the legislature. I think we've seen that more on the agency side. But this session, we're expecting a big focus around groundwater uses. The Oregonian did about a four-issue series on groundwater and declining groundwater resources. So I think we'll see a lot of discussion on increasing the capacity at water resources to do groundwater studies and get a better sense of what's going on in the groundwater world. But I think we'll also see restrictions on how groundwater is permitted at water resources. So pay attention to that, because I think that has a big implication, not just east side, but as you all know, west side here as well. Another focus around water quality. Portland, with the increased focus on toxics related to air and lead, there's a bigger focus around water quality and toxins, and I think agriculture gets pulled into that discussion. A big one is around monitoring wells, especially if you have rental properties, creating a mandatory inspection on your wells for when you have just rental houses on your property. So be paying attention to that issue. That's more related to nitrate levels. After a big discussion you just had on climate change, cap and trade will be a big discussion in climate this session as well. This may have some change. Chris Edwards, Senator Edwards, who just resigned, he was the big pusher of a cap and trade legislation this session. With him leaving, I wouldn't say that this issue goes away, but they'll be looking for a new champion to be moving that forward. I know Jenny Dressler came yesterday and talked about labor, but that will continue to be an issue, especially with flexible scheduling and trying to get fixes to the paid sick leave laws. And the other item is a transportation package. A lot of discussion in the legislature about a transportation package. They were unable to do that last legislative session. Those bipartisan groups are starting to meet around what a transportation package would look like. And the bigger piece is how do you fund it and what's the cost and implications to folks on the ground. So moving away from the legislature, there's two items I want to hit on real quick, and I've passed around. There might not be enough for everyone, but I think there's some cards going around related to those. So who's aware that there's new WPS worker protection standard rules out? Okay, a few. Well, today is the last day to comment on the Oregon portion. So the WPS rules are a federal rule by EPA. They were originally put in place in 92. And the first change that goes into effect is the first change that we've had since then. And majority of the rules go into effect January of next year. OSHA is working on the implementation of that at the Oregon level. There are some delays around training materials. But the big issue is that this OSHA portion, the comment period ends today. And we're trying to drive comments on that OSHA piece, and I'll talk about why. So in the OSHA rules, you have some retraining requirements in WPS, and I'm just going to talk about the OSHA rules because I would need probably a half an hour to talk about all the WPS changes. But you need to train your workers who are going to be in an application area. You also need to have separate training for your handlers. What we have going on is that EPA recognizes for training handlers that it can be done by a certified applicator, it can be done by somebody who's taken a train the trainer course, or it can be someone who's appointed by the Department of Ag as a trainer. The problem that we have is OSHA is saying that certified applicators must also take a train the trainer course. So in OSHA's opinion, just because you have a certified applicator's license, you do not have enough training to train your workers who are going to be handling products. The train the trainer course is an 8-hour course. On top of what you're already taking with your certified applicators, the train the trainer course, also what Oregon was setting up under looking at the EPA rules, they only have the ability to train right now about 240 workers across the state. They're looking at doing 8 sessions limited to 40 or 30 people each. There is an effort to get an online course moving along, but right now, Oregon does not have the capacity to do this and get 1,000 people or whatever it is needed to get through a train the trainer course and be in compliance. So there's also another amendment that's different than the EPA rules. That's actually a good one, and it relates to exclusion zones. So when you're doing an application around that application equipment, you have an exclusion zone. So it is 25 feet for backpack sprayers or on-ground applications, so your spray rig, and it's 100 feet for air blast sprayers or aerial applications. Where this came into effect is in orchard settings. Many times, especially in Oregon where we're unique, is on-farm housing will be right in the middle of an orchard. And so those applications take place in the evening, early mornings. So having a worker get up at 4 a.m., leave while the application goes by, and then goes back into the setting is not worker safety. And so what we've talked with OSHA about and what's in the draft rules is extending, is doing this shelter-in-place alternative. So for ag employers, it would allow the workers to be notified that there's going to be an application taking place and that they need to stay in the building during the application. So this is a big priority for some growers here in the Valley, but really for the Hood River, Wasco County area. So what we're asking is that sometime before 5 o'clock today, and you all can do it on your phone with the cards that were passed out, is that you submit comments and you can go to ofsonline.org/takeaction, and we have a pre-done letter that you can amend to suit yourself or use the letter that you have in place. You can do it on your smartphones at the meeting today and go on and submit comments to OSHA. Department of Ag has gone in and talked to OSHA about how the train the trainer requirements are unworkable, but they've got to hear from growers today so we can get some workable rules with the agency. The other item I want to hit on really quick is related to chlorpyrifos. So in 2007, environmental groups petitioned EPA to revoke all the tolerances on chlorpyrifos. In response, EPA initiated a product review and went through, but that wasn't good enough for these groups, and they sought an order from the Ninth Circuit. So that's what's going forward right now, and the court has ordered EPA to make a final decision. And EPA has proposed to revoke all the tolerances for chlorpyrifos, and there's a public comment period until January 17th on that. So EPA needs to hear from growers. They need to hear that it's an effective product and it's used by all of you. It's especially important, I think, here in Oregon, where we have the specialty crops and we have a lot of limits on alternatives. EPA is basing its decision on really poor science, on some entomology studies that they had said were inefficient in the past and have now pulled them back up and are trying to reuse those. And also, EPA needs to be reminded that they can deny the petition and just address all these issues through their normal review process. So Dow Chemical has, and those cards have been passed out, I believe, as well, they have a petition online that you can go on and just add your name to. And it'll ask you, so it's at chlorpyrifos.com/petitions. It'll ask you to click what crops you grow. Not a lot of Oregon crops on this list, but you can click other critical crops not listed above and list out what you use that product on. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. It's great to be here today. Yes. So, in terms of training,
yes.
So there's two training requirements. So, you have workers. So, workers are employees that are entering an application area that's been treated within 30 days. So, I think the prime example I kind of use is blueberries. Maybe it doesn't relate to all of you, but blueberry growers have to spray for spotted wing Drosophila all season long during harvest. Their workers need to actually have worker protection training for harvest because they're going to be in an application area within 30 days of that application window. It makes no sense because you could have the same field and have U-pick growers come out and pick the product and not have to have training. The training for workers is about an 18-minute video. That is done now. And you can actually get it online, or I know I was speaking to CPS growers, they've got videos in their office that you folks can come and watch. The other training that needs to happen is handlers. So handlers are employees who are using products. For you all, spot sprayers is probably the prime example. Even if they are a spot spray crew that you're having come out, you are responsible as the operator, not your contractor. So this is very similar to labor laws. You're the one responsible to make sure they've had training. That video, I don't believe is completed yet. My guess it's gonna be 25 to 35 minutes. And what OSHA is saying is to put that video in and have people watch it, you need to go through a train the trainer course. And that's different than what EPA did. EPA actually had that in their original rules, sorry to get very technical, and through quite a bit of comments from the agricultural community, actually backed that out of their rules and said, if you're a certified applicator, you can train handlers. Does that help?
We don't.
So that's the joy of working with these agencies is we were actually in a meeting where OSHA said, well, you know, I mean, we're really not gonna enforce it. We'll give some variance. Well, you know what, that's a rule that's in place. It has civil penalties assigned to it. The worker protection standards also allow employees to request records or their designee. So I think there's a lot of vulnerability for farmers to have labor activist groups or legal aid come in on the behalf of workers and say, well, you didn't do the training right. And it leaves folks vulnerable. And so that's a big piece of why we're so concerned. And I think Department of Ag's really concerned about the OSHA rules and is helping get those fixed is that we can't get that training done right now. We don't have the capacity to do it or the resources to kind of pay the trainers. It's a $100,000 program probably coming out of the pesticide division now that we're having to, you know, comes from money from all you all to pay for the courses that they're doing. Yeah, Anna? Nope, it only applies to workers. So if they are non-workers, trespassing, U-pick, that doesn't apply. It's only your employees that need to have that training. It's worker protection standards. I know it doesn't make sense. Welcome to the federal government. And those are set in stone by EPA now. NASDA has asked, that's the National Association of State Agencies, they have sent a letter asking for a delay in the rules. I don't think that's not going to happen with this administration. I know, and I was in DC 2 weeks ago, that the national ag groups already starting to work on the new administration coming in on many of these rules. This is a top priority for them to try to get some changes, but this is what we have coming in place in January. So that, a 25-foot buffer is that you cannot have, so that's spot spraying and in your equipment. You cannot have somebody come within 25 feet of that application site, employee, anyone, while you're operating. There, and I think he's trying to like get me off the stage. The one thing is that applies to on your farm, off your farm. So if you're you know, going along the edge of the farm and there's a runner coming by on the edge or a biker, under the EPA guidance, you actually need to stop, assess the situation, and make sure that it's safe, you're not gonna drift on them, and then continue on. That applies for air blast sprayers. Now, I would say you shouldn't be drifting on the road anyway, so any application that you're doing should be safe. But there is that requirement that, and especially if it's in field, nobody's coming close to your equipment. Correct. Correct. Okay.
All right.
Thank you all.
Thank you.